Welcome to Season 2 of the Triple Existential Podcast. I'm your host, Ebi Cote-Nord.
God is watching over us in Brookfield. It should be coming up on the left, I think. I look up from my GPS and I see the motel I'm getting bedbugs in tonight. I've seen this place in the daylight, when it's kind of cute and quaint. It's a roadside motel, the kind with color TV and no vacancy tonight, in the middle of Brookfield, Illinois. There it is! Here! Here! Right here! Turn here!
Where should I park?
How the fuck do I know? There's plenty of parking. Don't go far, please.
Maybe there's cops everywhere.
Exactly. At one point, I'm sure this parking lot was filled with large cars with equally large tail fins. Cars put there by people who just bought pies out of vending machines at diners. I'm sure it was lovely. But tonight, I'm getting out of my car, scanning the doors for the number I jotted down in my notebook, even though it's in my text messages. And to my left, there's screaming. Some thuds. More screaming and swearing. I don't know what's happening. I mean, I do know exactly what's happening. I can hear quite clearly she's not answering his questions about why she was texting another man earlier, and he's sick of this shit. I'm not feeling reassured here. Normally, I have way more information on the person I'm meeting before I meet them in a room next to a violent beatdown in progress. But this guy isn't from America, so there's only so much I could find out. I'm pretty sure I ruled out that he's not a cop because he texted me his passport information and, well, Jesus fucking Christ, I just realized that, like, cops can have dual citizenship. What am I doing? I'm never this reckless. I'm straight up walking into a violation of my probation in the state of Illinois right now. I just know it. Breathe. There's the door number I'm looking for. I scan the scene before knocking, looking into my car and nodding at my driver to give him some signal. I don't know what I'm signaling, honestly, because I'm definitely not assuring him that I'm doing okay. I guess I'm saying, hey, if I'm walking into my murder right now, you probably don't know what to do because we never made a plan for this. I guess Godspeed or whatever. This will be fine. I'm never really sure if the time between the knock on the door and the answer is eternity or so fast I can't remember which happened first. Or both. But this moment where I'm staring at an Eastern European man in a red tracksuit through a cracked motel door is definitely on the eternal side of the spectrum. Hi. Paul? Oh, yes, come in. There's a man beating his wife in the next room. It's a little unnerving. I want to say I'm being altruistic and caring by telling someone who might tell someone else. But honestly, I'm just hoping that if it turns out this guy is police, he'll go after the neighbors and not the nice lady who just showed up to sell him overpriced handjobs. He peeks out the door, and I'm scanning the room. Is there luggage? Is this guy clearly staying here? It's disheveled, I suppose. I'm surprised it doesn't smell like damp cigarettes. That's a good sign. I might not get tetanus. Yeah, this guy is pretty obviously staying in this room. He's not a cop. I don't know. They seem quiet now. His English is not quite broken. Maybe a little fractured, dinged up, but it's not quite broken. It's not good, but I should be able to fumble my way through a conversation. I need to say something, but the only words my brain is sending to my lips are, how the fuck does someone staying in this shithole afford someone like me? And stop, don't say that. You're a fucking professional. Do not say that. So, what are you doing here in Brookfield?
I'm here for work.
Hold on. I have an envelope for you. Thanks. I'm realizing how hard it is to make small talk when I'm utterly astonished by the lack of cigarette burns on really anything in the room. So what kind of work do you do? He walks back over to me and looks at my face and smiles with the envelope in his hand. I resist running my hand under the tabletop to see how much gum is underneath. If there's no cigarette burns, there has to be an abundance of bubble yum and Nicorette stuck to things. If not, this place makes no sense to me. Oh, right. Just 1 hour? He's so happy. Actually, let's make it 3. How much is 3? 3? Oh, that's 1500. I say it so apologetically. I'm not fucking sorry, though. 3 hours of pretending you're interested in a stranger is a lot of hours. Much less when you also have to pretend to be in love and insatiably lustful on command. Okay, 3 then. My stomach knots up. 3 hours? What is happening? 3 hours? Here? This guy can afford 3 hours and he's staying here? Nothing about any of this is normal. I mean, I know there's no such thing as normal in my life, but this is so much more not normal. Let me just text my driver. The man grabs a second envelope and places it next to the first. Sit down next to me on the bed. Yep, this is my murder. I know I think it's my murder all the time, but this time it's definitely my murder. This one is it. If I'm not going to jail, I'm going to be found by housekeeping in that closet in 3 days. But the show must go on. Smile. So, you didn't tell me. What are you doing in town?
I'm working. I run a ministry in my country, and I'm here to help spread the word and...
Oh, shit. This is my intervention. He's here to rescue me from my job. Okay, girl, keep smiling. Nodding, you do not have to be rescued. You do not have to go with him. Just play along. Be polite. If he gives you literature, put it in your purse. Answer his questions correctly. Thank him for his time. You know how to charm your way out of this. So you run a ministry?
I'm a priest.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
I've been working a lot here in the U.S. Lots of meetings, asking for money for the church. We have a school, and I'm here to get money from Americans to pay for the school. I have to meet with hockey players from my country tomorrow. It's good. The Lord is good. They know God is good to them. I bless them, but I work so hard. I just want to relax, and you are a beautiful woman. I want to relax with you.
Normally that would sound creepy, but he makes it sound sweet and... Oh my God, I'm about to fuck a priest.
Hi, this is EB, and you're listening to the Triple Existential Podcast. And tonight we're going to be doing something a little bit different. I am going to be the guest on my own show, and my friend Justin here is going to be taking over and being the host. So he has complete creative control. And I have no safe word.
I don't think that's true. You told me we had to be very serious and not at all fun on this. So you can say you have no control, but you have definitely set parameters.
Well, yeah, I did set parameters, but you can break the rules because it's your show now.
Oh, okay.
Excellent. I quit the show and I gave it to you and now it's your show.
This should be interesting because I'm not a sex worker. So this show is going to take a completely different tack. So that'll
be fun. Which is actually, so this is kind of the idea is that, like, you know, and to have guests on my show is kind of, it's, you know, I can't have civilian guests on my show because people already understand the lives of people who are not sex workers. So I thought it'd be more interesting to have people who are not sex workers come on my show and talk to me like they're the host, because then I can still talk about sex work and not, you know, whatever it is you normal people do with your lives.
not a lot. Mostly it's yoga and Starbucks and podcasts. Actually, podcasts is very common in the non-sex worker community.
Yeah.
It's a right of way for straight male men.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a big deal. Everyone's got to have a podcast.
It's
And now you've got two, because you just took over mine.
I did. I've got questions I prepared for this, which is completely the opposite of how I run my podcast, where I don't put any preparation in on.
Oh, do you want to tell us about your podcast?
We can do that at the end. I don't think anybody
cares. Okay, yeah, let's not. Yeah, I mean, this is your podcast now.
This is my pride and joy. So EB, hello.
Hi.
So the last episode of the Triple Existential podcast came out back in June. The world has obviously a little different since then. We're still stuck in quarantine, but obviously there has been a shift in the political climate. And I know we kind of joked about making this serious, but I know the last time I interviewed you, one of the things we talked about was SESTA, FOSTA, and sort of the rights of sex workers and how the political climate affected your ability to work safely and to work legally. Can you give me and give, you know, the people who listen to my podcast sort of an update on how you feel about the political climate and what that means for you and your, you know, your work, your livelihood?
Oh, my God. It is a fucking shit show. I'm sorry. Can I say that on your show now?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. it is, I've actually been, completely out of work since March. My original plan was to go ahead and work through the pandemic back in March. And I was like, you know, it's, you know, nobody's ever been looking out for our safety, and people can't be healthy and fulfilled if they're living in seclusion and isolation. And I wanted to be able to like be there for people during shutdown. And then I realized that I have an asthmatic child, and this is a respiratory pandemic, and my child will absolutely die. Like, no question, my child will die if you know, they get COVID. So I shut down completely. And so that's been my political climate, is that I've been trying to work online, and so is everybody, like not just full service sex workers, like everyone is doing porn now. So the market's a little bit saturated. And
you actually tried to convince me to do porn. You said that there was a market for what I offer, which is surprising to me.
There's a market for everything.
I don't think that's true.
I mean, there's a market for like furry adult babies. So, you know, I mean, yeah, there's a market for you, Justin.
I guess. I don't think I'm going to go forward with that, but,
I mean, it would be an interesting, like, you know, like your two lives online would just be interesting.
There would be a weird cross section. And when we talk later about what I do for my podcast, I think that reference will make a little more sense. Go ahead.
Nope. I was just going to say, it's a really interesting juxtaposition to have you as like the first takeover host.
Am I the first one?
You are. You're my first gorilla host.
I'm taking your gorilla podcast virginity, I guess.
You are. Yeah.
Wow. That feels special. But what, so obviously, you know, you haven't been working, but are you happy with the November election? I don't know if you want to get too much into your politics, but what about the direction the country is taking?
Ooh.
No.
So it was a rough one. It was really rough, yeah. Because, you know, so we talked about SESTA FOSTA and, you know, the last time we talked, which was 2 years ago. And SESTA FOSTA was kind of the big political issue that was kind of spearheaded by a certain Kamala Harris, who has become quite a name since this election cycle.
Yeah, she's important now.
Yeah, she is very important. So one of her pet projects and the thing that really shot her up through the ranks, and, you know, you know, that was her, her, oh, I don't even know what the word is, but
signature,
it was
signature legislation.
Yeah. But it was sort of her, her like signature, project was really to crack down on sex trafficking. So she was really influential in getting Backpage shut down and then in getting SESTA-FOSTA passed and getting it, you know, authored. So we have her to thank for that. And on the other hand, I'm like, yay, like woman vice president, like woman of color vice president. This is amazing. And also, she hates me and has bragged about putting women like me in jail. So it's really difficult, but also, like, you know, anything is better than Trump. So there's that.
Yeah. And I imagine there is some voting against your own self-interest by, you know, voting a Democratic ticket if you are a sex worker with Kamala Harris's past positions. But at the same time, you know, rising tide raises all ships, and you hope that maybe it'll get better as more people surround her that can speak more positively on the impact of sex workers and sort of, you know, how her legislation previously had hurt you all in your ability to, you know, work and work safely and survive.
Yeah, she has. When she was running for president, she had said that she was willing to entertain the idea of decriminalizing sex work. So, you know, I don't believe her, but the fact that she'd be willing to say it at all is a huge step in the right direction.
Right.
Like, we're nowhere close to being there, but it's, you know, a huge step towards it.
And this is how, I mean, that's how it comes about too, right? You socialize the idea, you get people comfortable with the idea, even if there is an initial pushback. It's the same thing they did with the, you know, the decriminalization of marijuana. They start floating the idea, they let people get their initial outrage out over it. And then as people get more saturated with the idea and they get more inundated with people talking about it, it becomes less scary. Because sex, I mean, full disclosure, I've never solicited, johned, whatever the right phrase is. So, like, the last time we talked to you, there was a bit of, not fear, but there was the unknown. I didn't know what was allowed to talk about, what was taboo. And I wouldn't say I'm woke, because I don't like that phrase, but I am a pretty open individual. You know, and I'm from the Northeast, where, you know, whatever. But, like, for people in bumfuck, there we go. We're on brand now. for people in bumfuck Kansas.
No, we can't talk about butt fucking, not on this podcast.
Oh. Well, hold on. Let me cross out my next 17 questions.
All right.
Okay.
That wraps up our show, everybody.
Anyway, thank you for listening. But no, you know, as you socialize the issue and as people who aren't as familiar and aren't as comfortable with sex work get, you know, have it brought up around them, it becomes something that's more acceptable. And maybe that's her tack on this, is, you know, she brings it up and it, you know, becomes more prevalent. I hope. I could be wrong. I probably am, but
I hope that she is moved by I feel like there is a general climate of, you know, slowly inching towards the idea of decriminalizing sex work. I don't think that, you know, not everyone, but like a lot of people really thought that, like, we go like legalize marijuana, and marijuana is legalized, it's not decriminalized in most places. So there is a difference. So one is like regulated, and you can still be arrested if you are selling in the wrong capacity or consuming in the wrong capacity, whereas like decriminalization would be, you know, there is no legislation that would allow the cops to like bust you.
Right.
So for example, like stripping is legal, but it's not decriminalized because cops come in and they bust sex workers who are in strip clubs, you know, or dancers, you know, they bust dancers for whatever reasons, you know, all the time. So, but yeah, so a lot of people thought that the next obvious step after marijuana was sex work. And I don't think America is there yet.
Yeah.
And people aren't super motivated now that they're all stoned. So.
I mean, yeah. So that's, so now as we shift away from kind of the serious thing I brought up, and I, as I want to get into lighter topics, because I don't think either of us want to be too serious on this. Something you brought up on a previous podcast that I thought was interesting. I thought would be interesting to discuss. You were referencing how you don't have people who will support you in normal society. And the example you gave, and this is what I want to focus on, is that if you go to a party and someone makes a dead hooker joke, no one's coming to your defense, because sex work is still, again, as I previously mentioned, it's still sort of taboo. As we move into more cultural acceptance of sex work and sex workers, the language around it needs to change, and the humor around it needs to change as well. So what, I mean, obviously dead hooker jokes aren't funny, because that's a very real threat that sex workers face, is, you know, murder, which is, I hear, bad.
I haven't been murdered yet, but no. I've decided that I'm not going to be a fan of it, like, when it happens. Like, it's going to be something that I'm going to find extremely upsetting in the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, I've murdered that pussy before, but I've never, you know, sure, murdered anyone. So I'm sure it's horrible. but what is, so like, what is the humor that as a sex worker you would find funny around your profession? Like, what is funny to joke about for you? So as people become more accustomed to sex work and more around it, that, you know, because you can't take anything you do too seriously. Nobody can, right? So there needs to be some levity that is brought to the profession. What do you find funny about sex work? What can people joke about?
I mean, sex work is absolutely absurd. Like, what I do is ridiculous. You know, I'm with these people and we are, like, naked and sweaty. There's, like, weird body fluids. Everybody smells bad. We're, like, staring at people's buttholes that, like, we only know because, like, there's money involved. Like, it's, there's so much that's, like, hilarious and absurd and really, I mean, and in an endearing and sometimes even, like, weirdly wholesome way. You know, you don't need to kill us to make it funny to talk about us. Like, I literally eat assholes for a living. So, like, you know, and I'm ever like, you know, this tastes terrible. And, like, I literally eat buttholes. Like,
is there a joke that a client has made in the moment that at the time you were like, that's a really weird joke, but as you've reflected on it down the line, you're like, actually, that was fucking hilarious?
No.
So you date exclusively unfunny men?
I do. But, like, I mean, let's be real. I'm funnier than my clients.
I think that's
universally.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, has there been a situation that, you know, like, I have stories from my job that I tell up whenever I want to, you know, bring some levity to the situation, kind of involve some humor. Is there a story that you like to tell that, like, is your party joke story about your work?
Okay, so I don't actually – have I talked about the aliens guy on the show or not? So oh, my gosh. I hope he's not listening. But so there's this guy that I saw for, like, years, and he was convinced that I'm an alien.
What?
Yeah, like, he's convinced that, like, I'm an alien, and he would be so drunk, and he was, you know, he was one of my favorite people to see, but it was like, we would spend like 6 hours talking about, like, aliens. And
was it Tom DeLonge? Are you allowed to say that?
I cannot confirm or deny. Okay.
I just think that's a very Tom DeLonge thing to do. Sorry. You know who Tom DeLonge is? Sorry.
I can't confirm or deny. I cannot confirm or deny.
Okay. But you do know who he is, Tom DeLonge. Like, you know of Tom DeLonge.
I don't.
Oh, he's the
now I've given it away that it's not him. So now everyone knows that it's his brother.
No. Okay. Tom DeLonge was the singer of Blink 182, who quit the band at, like, the height of their success to start I don't think it's an NGO, but it's a research company into the existence of aliens. He's like super obsessed with them. He went on the Rogan podcast and talked for aliens for like 4 hours. And even Joe Rogan was like, bro, you are fucking out there. Sorry. Continue your story.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm really happy for Tom, and I encourage everyone to pursue their dreams.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good for him. And maybe he can also talk to this client of mine. But this guy, he's convinced that the moon is a spaceship, that aliens are watching us from Earth, and it's tethered to the Earth, and gravity doesn't exist, and they're trying to farm our creativity. And I won't admit that I'm an alien. And then like one time he actually was like, I was trying to get dressed before I was leaving, and he tried to stick his entire head up my vagina. He's like, I've always wondered if it would fit. And then I'm just like getting dressed, and then all of a sudden I've got this like head like butting up against like my crotch. And I'm like, what is happening? Oh, okay. He's trying to stick his head up my vagina. Okay, cool. I guess I just pause now and let him, because it's not going to fit. Like, that's not a thing. That it's just, it's not like they don't. For those of you who don't know, there's a pelvis and it's made of bone and it doesn't move. Like, it separates during childbirth, but a baby head is smaller than a full grown man head, especially if that man head is full of aliens. So you can't just stick it up somebody's vagina. No. In theory, you could probably put a small hole or head up a butthole, because a butthole will like stretch, and it's a little bit more compliant than a vagina hole, and but it takes a lot of work.
I wish this was a video podcast so people could see the look on my face right now. It's a mixture between awe and horror, and maybe I'm turned on a little bit. Tiny bit.
Sure. I can't do the whole head thing. And I'm like the queen, so, but somebody out there can. And that is like an empress.
The occupational hazards of sex work sound awful. I mean, murder, head up the vagina, I can't even say the word right now.
You're just like, no, because it doesn't go there. It's a butthole. No. Butthole. Like, just remember that. Like, I can't get it out. I can't get it in.
I had someone call me by the wrong name on an email today, and that like ruined my day. But I wasn't murdered or had a head up my butthole. So I'll take my job for right now.
I agree. I would rather have somebody sticking a head up my butthole than emailing me, especially by the wrong name. But
yeah, they called me Justine, which was very offensive to me.
Oh,
awful.
Because Justine's a bitch.
I had a neighbor named Justine. She was awful. She was horrible. Yeah. She was like 3 years younger than me, and she always beat me up. Okay, so I have a story, and I need to get your take on this story, because it happened like 11 years ago, and it clearly still has some sort of impacting trauma on me. I dated a sex worker.
Was it me?
It was not you. We have not. No, we haven't.
We've actually never met in person.
I know, which is unfortunate. So actually, rewind for a quick second. I think a good idea, once the new president is sworn in and everything, you know how they have like the Million Man March, and then they had like the Million Right Wing Nut Job March. I think we should do a Million Sex Worker March. Just get like all the prostitutes to come to DC.
We could do that.
It would be like interesting.
We actually do, you know, march kind of locally, but there's a lot of hazards with going out in public and marching together as like, we're criminals.
Yeah. But then again, the Republicans do it, and they have no problem admitting they're criminals.
And also, we don't get called prostitutes.
Oh, I'm sorry. See, this is what I don't know. I know it's sex work. Aside from sex workers, is there proper nomenclature?
Yeah, sex worker or like full service or like escort, if you're talking about like, you know, who commit the crime of prostitution. But like a prostitute is a criminal.
Oh.
So it's actually like kind of a slur.
Well, I apologize, but I have learned something. So you have learned. Yes. Okay. So my story now. Approximately 12 years ago, I was dating a sex worker. Not professionally, like personally. She was my girlfriend.
Right.
And in the early stages of our courtship, I brought her to a Boston Bruins game. Boston Bruins, for those of you listening who may not know, are a professional hockey team. While we were at the game, she and I, we were both pretty inebriated. At one point, she left to go to the ladies' room. On her return, she got a bit confused. She went up the wrong set of stairs, which can happen at sports stadiums because you kind of get lost, you get confused, you think I'm in 27, you're actually in 26, it happens. As she went up into this wrong section, now mind you, I think this was only our second or third date. I see her going up the stairs, you know, not in my section, and I see her start talking to a gentleman and sitting on his lap and having a full conversation with him as his wife and children look on in horror. The wife called over security. We were escorted out of the arena. I missed the end of the Bruins game. It turns out that in her inebriated state, she saw someone who was a client of hers, completely forgot where she was, thought she was at the hockey game with the client, and started engaging with him.
Oh, no.
To my horror, because while I knew what she was and, you know, I knew obviously who she was and whatnot, but I didn't know how to react in that moment because I am an insecure male, and seeing her sit on another man's lap on a date with me confused and terrified me.
God.
I had to deal with the drunken emotional wreck of my, you know, soon to be girlfriend as she realized she probably ruined that man's life. So I think I bring up the story because I'd like to know how you would have handled that situation, because I just
lost my mind. One is I don't drink, so
that helps.
I'm probably not going to get drunk and sit on the wrong person's lap. That doesn't mean that I'm so smart I wouldn't do it. I could be totally sober and fuck up in exactly the same way. So I'm supposed to be you in that situation?
Well, that or you could be her, because, like, if you were out, like, do you acknowledge your guests, your clients, like if you were out in public?
If I saw somebody in public, no. Really? So basically I treat it like HIPAA. So if I see somebody in public, like, I don't know them. And if I, you know, talk about a client, I have to, like, protect their anonymity. So yeah, I wouldn't approach, if a client approached me in public, I would probably be, I think it would really depend on the client, but I would probably be, like, a little bit annoyed. Like,
really?
Hey, yeah. I mean, you know, cause I'm not out in the world, like, being EB, you know, I'm out, you know, being like a mom and, you know, just like a regular, like, lady out in the world. And, you know, also, you know, you don't know who I'm with. And while most people in my life do know what I do, you know, if my mom doesn't want to meet my clients, like, my mom kind of likes the like, we pretend we don't know, and that is perfectly okay.
So can I push back on you a little bit?
Sure.
So I think what interests me about that is if the goal is the normalization and the social acceptance of sex work, you don't think that could possibly be regressive. And the reason I ask is, so in my normal job, you know, I deal with clients because I'm in sales. So I have clients, you know, very much similar to you. Were I out at a bar, or were I out, you know, at an event with my family, and one of my clients approached me, it would be, oh, John from this company, how are you? Good to see you. This is my wife. Because what I do is socially acceptable. Do you think that by delineating your EB life from your non-EB life, you are sort of helping create that stigma around sex work, that it's something that should be hidden?
So one of the reasons that we actually have the delineations is about personal safety.
Okay.
So, you know, having people know and having no control over where we are outed and where we are not outed, it can be a very dangerous proposition. But also the nature of our work, even if it's socially acceptable, is still, you know, really intimate and it's a very private encounter, much in the way that like a doctor patient, you know, relationship is very private, even if it's not a stigmatized relationship. Like a doctor can't acknowledge who their patients are in public. Your therapist can't approach you in public and be like, hey, how's it going? And I view it in that, like, I have to honor my client's privacy. And when I'm out not working, I also don't want to be entertaining my clients off the clock.
Okay. I accept that. Not that, I mean, not if, that if me accepting it has and, anything to do with it, but
yeah, you know, I mean, if somebody came and said hi and was just like, hey, how you doing? I'd be like, you know, great. I'm just shopping. It would really be an awkward encounter too, because, you know, I'm like this professional dream girl and like, I don't need somebody watching me buy like kale.
First
and, like,
off,
ground chicken.
Like, so of all the things you've talked about, I think that you eat kale is the thing that actually sort of turns me off on you altogether.
I actually really like kale. I'm sorry.
Okay. I get it, but I'm upset.
Well, I have to say that like one of the things that I love about your Twitter feed, and that I actually think that your Twitter feed is like the sexiest Twitter feed of everybody I follow.
Wow.
Is because it's not only funny, but like you have meat and sell cookies. So
wait, hold on. We need to clarify. I'm not packing meat. Like, it's not like she means I literally cook. She's not making a reference to anything going on with
meat
specifically.
You have meat. Yeah, there's meat. Like, there's a lot of meat.
There's a lot of meat and cookies.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I look at my entire feed is like naked, beautiful women. And then like, I stop for pictures of
my meat.
Your meat, but like it's actually like brisket.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Well, good to know. Now I know what brings in the ladies, and it has nothing to do with me whatsoever.
It's literally your meat.
Yes. Yeah.
I told you there's a market.
There is a market. I'm gonna make that my new Twitter profile. Ladies, come here for the meat. Okay. So I see we're bumping up against the time feed. So I'm going to do a little, I call this a crossover. I'm going to reference my podcast and I'm going to reference your work. So the podcast I do is called Please Stand Clear of the Podcast. It's about Disney, right? So I'm one of those weird adults who enjoys Disney. One of my side jobs is I do book vacations for people at Disney. I get paid to help people book their vacations. And one thing we like to talk about on our podcast is some of the best places in the Magic Kingdom and in Disney World to partake in adult activities. EB, have you been to Disney ever recently?
Not as an adult.
Okay. Well, I need you to be adult EB right now.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you, if you had a client who wanted to get frisky, I'm a child, so I use phrases like get frisky.
I would use that term. Like, let's get frisky at Disney. Let's go.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So let's do it. So where at Disney would you think the best place to surreptitiously get frisky would be?
The Haunted Mansion. Am I wrong?
God. Yes. No. Oh my God. I love you. I love you so much. We did a whole episode on where the places we would most likely do things are. And I have proudly gotten a hand job on the Haunted Mansion.
Nice. Was it for me?
No, it wasn't. We've discussed this. I haven't met you before.
I mean, there's a lot of people who think they haven't met me. They've gotten hand jobs from me. Oh, was I not? Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah.
That's you know, that was before, like, people had to give me money for that shit. So.
In that case, it's quite likely it might have been you. I don't know.
It might have been me.
No, yeah. So the right answer is obviously the Haunted Mansion. And then after that, it's going to be the Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover.
That was my second pick.
Oh my God, you're the perfect woman. I mean, frankly, minus the whole.
If I just give up kale.
If you gave up kale, exactly. If you gave up kale and had less men putting their head directly in or around your vagina.
They can put it near.
No. I said in the search of aliens. They can put their head.
Oh, yeah.
Just not in the search of aliens.
Yeah, I mean, don't put, like, the top of your head up my vagina, but, like, if, like, maybe, like, the face part of your head, you know, cool.
Yeah.
We're good. Yeah. And if you want to look for aliens like that, I'm, you know, I'll let you as long as you're paying.
I mean, I would do it for the right amount of money. Well, hey, I really want to thank you for coming on my podcast. I know this was probably tedious for you. You didn't want to do this. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me after I so abruptly quit my show and then just hoisted it off onto you and then inviting me back so graciously.
It was a bit of a burden, and I will take this off of whatever you charge me the first time we do meet.
Sure. How about 50%?
Excellent. Sounds great. EB, thank you very much for joining me on the Triple Existential podcast. Have a great night.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.